Hi everyone, Mallory here, and welcome to the official first episode of my Mallory's Weird World Adventures podcast. So right now, I have to admit, my husband and I are working on getting a sound booth put in downstairs at our house. So currently, I am conducting this podcast from my closet, which has lots of clothing, which is actually working like a nice sound buffer. But I have all of the cats and our dog closed out, and this could be an adventure because they're already trying to get back in. They really want to be a part of the podcast, but hopefully that will not be a problem, but I just thought that would be a funny little thing to share with you guys. I have a photo of my setup here that I'd love to put online later so we can all have a nice giggle about my creative little setup here. I like to build things, and I think I built a nice little space here in my closet in the meantime. Anyway, I would like to take this opportunity to thank you all for tuning in. For those of you who missed the first episode zero, I wanted to give a quicker and more concise recap about who I am and why I'm hosting this podcast. I also wanted to discuss exactly what occult really means and the reputation it's been given. And since this is our first episode here, and it's coming out on Friday the 13th, happy Friday the 13th, everybody, by the way, also happy New Year, I wanted to explain the history of how and why Friday the 13th may have been considered unlucky. So let's start with a brief background of who I am and why we're discussing occult topics and adventure travel. For those who don't know, my name is Mallory Mackey, and I've always had a strong passion for everything dorky and unusual. I grew up in Richmond, Virginia, and I had never left the East Coast of the United States until I was about 20 years old. It was then when I left the country for the first time to study abroad in Serbia and England. In Serbia, my group and I trained with the Da Theater, which was a political theater that performed around and about the revolution in Belgrade, both before and after the war on Kosovo. It was really my first time ever being completely independent of anyone. Honestly, I was terrified at first, but I really did change in Serbia. I found my love of adventure, and I knew that if I could get by in that environment in such a foreign place, that I could get by anywhere. I am and will always be unbelievably grateful for that experience and my time briefly living in Belgrade. Then I went over to England and Buenos Aires shortly after, and this love of travel simply just took over from within me. In the world of travel, everyone focuses on the mainstream resorts and getaways. In fact, when you say vacation, people usually immediately think of a beach, and almost no one thinks outside the box and challenges their own minds. When we are giving an easy, cut-and-paste experience like most inclusive resorts provide us with, we don't really stimulate our minds. I want to see things I haven't seen before, and maybe many others haven't either. I want to experience things that are out of this world, even if that means figuring out how to get myself from point A to point B without help, and frankly, I've always just loved weird stuff and the paranormal too. And as I'm getting to showcase these locations, the more I'm finding that there's a huge market for them. Honestly, people love weird stuff and they love the paranormal, and even as I've become more confident talking about occult studies, so many people are fascinated by it. So there really is such a strong market for it out there. And I think we're all just discovering that we're comfortable enough being our true selves now. So we're all kind of able to have these interests and they're okay now. So like, you know, socially, whereas for a long time, it was very taboo to talk about this stuff. I've been invaded by cats. Anyway, it was around when I turned 30 when I decided to make travel my way of life, and everything changed. I began writing for multiple digital and print publications that feature and or focus on travel. I travel regularly for work, thanks to that incredible opportunity that came to me. I also started my own paranormal travel show called Weird World Adventures, and it showcases the strangest and most unbelievable places in the world, as well as weird people living weird lives all over. And I say weird in a loving way, as I myself am a complete weirdo. I think the weirdest thing you can find at a location is what truly defines its character. I also write blog posts for the Monroe Institute, which is a metaphysical center in Faber, Virginia, that focuses on teaching people about meditation and how to utilize sound technology in meditation to have an out-of-body experience. It's really quite a wonderful and unique place, so my life, thankfully, is fulfilling regularly without boundaries and, well, quite weird. Travel fully did become my way of life, my life focus, as I had intended it to. Yet, it wasn't quite enough. I found quickly that I wanted to give back to the world. I wanted to learn, and I wanted to change the world for the better. I know, simple, right? But something in me has always strived for greatness, and I found that enjoying and sharing the world, while wonderful, wasn't quite making a difference. I wanted to give back in any small way that I could. This directed me to scientific travel and exploration. So I began researching how I could get involved in a much greater way. This had me volunteering on expeditions from small villages in Cambodia for archaeology to generally abandoned islands off the coast of South Africa working with penguins. I found a love of giving back, working with scientists on expeditions, and contributing in any way that I could. And while I will always love volunteering on wildlife-related field projects and will likely continue to for years to come, I found my true passion lay in the why of anthropology. Yet in the more strange and taboo topics of folklore, mythology, and occult studies. This, of course, leads me to where I am now. I'm looking to pursue my master's degree in these topics, so I hope to soon get to officially announce that I am Mallory Mackey, Master of the Occult, and then who knows, maybe one day I can be the real Dr. Strange. And it is with great joy and excitement that I now announce that I have officially been elected into the Explorers Club as a national member. The Explorers Club is a centuries-old club dedicated to field research, scientific exploration, and the preservation of the instinct to explore. And to join the ranks of the world's greatest explorers is nothing short of a dream come true for me. I can't wait to update you guys on where this wonderful journey of exploration and adventure will lead me next. But for now, I can say that life is always an adventure. I found that adventure comes with perspective, and I hope you all shift your perspective to explore your lives and opportunities in the best way that suits you, one small step at a time. Well, and that's my life in a nutshell. Metaphysics, paranormal, meditation, travel, adventure, occultism, folklore, and mythology, which is all the fun and wonderful topics this podcast will be about. But today, let's shift our discussion more onto the occult. Let's take a moment to think about the word occult. Now that I've said it, you probably have this immediate scene set in your mind, like something moody, dark, maybe witches practicing something macabre and evil and secret. Am I close to painting your picture? Well, the funny reality is that while we paint a dark picture generally regarding the occult and occult studies, in all actuality, the word simply means hidden. Having come from the Latin word occultus, which means knowledge is hidden, occult has actually taken on a new meaning of its own in the modern world. Why hidden? Well, simply put, centuries ago, the phrase occult was used to reference anything non-mainstream that had to be practiced in secret. It was the hidden practices that go on that most people didn't even know about. By that definition and the origin of the word, even Christianity and all its many sects was considered an occult practice back in the early days when Christians as a whole were being persecuted. While the mainstream religion we know of today won the war and rose to common mainstream practice, there were many occult sects of Christianity that didn't make it out into the modern world. And today I'm going to discuss a couple of those variants with you because I think they're rather fascinating. Gnosticism is one of them. Gnosticism was an interesting and most definitely darker variant of Christianity and Judaism that became popular in the late 1st century AD in Roman Egypt. In its core, Gnostics named by the idea that enlightenment can be gained through gnosis, or knowledge and understanding, believed that the material universe was created by an evil god, making the existence and life we live flawed and evil, and we had to overcome it to enter into the spiritual salvation of eternity. Basically, they believed this life was created by an evil deity to test us and see if we were worthy to live in the real spiritual afterlife. So people had to live to prove their worth to make it over into basically their idea of heaven. Rather than focusing on Christian ideals that we know of today, they placed value in divinity, mysticism, spirituality, and enlightenment. They believed that knowledge of the divine was the most important thing to find salvation and that it came from an inward knowing. It seemed to be more of a spiritual and meditative sect of Christianity than what we would know of today. Regarding Jesus, they believed him to be the Gnostic savior who achieved enlightenment and represented a supreme being to serve as an example on earth. The early Orthodox Christian churches actually denounced Gnosticism when they rose to power, though Gnostics saw their values as working in alignment with the mainstream church. The mainstream church, however, did not disagree, and they destroyed a lot of their religious texts and documents and more or less pushed Gnostics to the sidelines, forcing its members to practice in secret and thus making it an occult study by the true definition of the word. As we all know, those who win the wars get to write the history. So with the Gnostic materials more or less destroyed, the Orthodox Christian figures wrote about them as heretics. painting their image as an affront to God and mainstream Christianity. So they basically made them look evil. Due to this, Gnostics practiced in secrecy for a time before more or less fizzling out of history. After the discovery of Egypt's Nag Hammadi Library in 1945, which contains Gnostic writings and text, people began talking about the long-forgotten Christian religion. And again, scholars argue whether it should be considered an early form of Christianity or rather its own religion, seeing as how different it is. Another form of early Christianity that was considered an occult study that was eventually painted out of our history is Hermetism. Hermes Trismegistos brought the idea of Gnosticism to the new sect of Christianity with Hermetism, also referred to as Hereticism. Hermetism held on to most of the Gnostic beliefs back when both sects of religions were flourishing in Roman Egypt. But the main difference was that believers of Hermetism had a more optimistic view in God. They believed that the creator and the material world both, rather than being an evil creation from an angry god, was in fact a beautiful creation in his image. They did, however, see the material world as a distraction from the divine nature of humanity, believing that people needed to refocus and look for inward knowledge to find enlightenment. They did, however, like many Christian religions, see human urges, such as sexual desires, as evil urges. Hermetism was a closer link to what we see as the Christian faith today, but again with a much more spiritual and divine approach. Due to its focus on divination, alchemy, and knowledge, it was too painted as a form of heresy throughout history. Eventually, it evolved from less of a practice into more of a word to reference the ancient Egyptians' desire for knowledge of alchemy and magic, and it ultimately became a popular term used by modern occultists as well. While it wasn't as aggressively persecuted as Gnosticism was, it did lose its popularity and become more of a parlor idea or term in the end. Christianity in itself, by the way, was largely considered a hidden occult practice until it was legalized in the Edict of Milan in 312. Before that, Christians also had to practice in secret, and therefore the full of Christianity was more or less an occult topic. In its early centuries, prior to legalization, Christians were wildly persecuted by the Jews, the Romans, and we cannot ignore the fact that different sects persecuted each other time and time again as well. After the legalization in 312, Christian sects began to fight and persecute each other even more famously so. Many older occult sects of Christianity, such as Gnosticism and Hermetism, like we talked about, in that time were pushed out of the mainstream Orthodox Church, being erased or heavily removed from history. Even in the 21st century, we see sects of Christianity persecuted, despite Christianity as a whole being the largest religion across the globe at the time. Even today, there is a Christian persecution complex emerging where people believe that Christian values and ideals are being oppressed by the government. All in all, we should start to take the emotion and fear out of the word occult, as it has been weaponized by mainstream groups for us to regard it with fear and disgust. In reality, it's just a word. It's a term used to reference the beliefs, spirituality, and practices people have conducted in secrecy, feeling that if they practice them in the mainstream, they may be harassed or persecuted. Have some of these practices been twisted or perhaps even dark or evil? Absolutely. But on the other hand, many occult ideals are harmless and even inspiring or good in nature, which is all subjective anyway. So I hope I've changed your opinion on this word just a bit and also helped you see that even our mainstream ideals were once an occult sect, placed in the backgrounds of history. And I think this is a really important takeaway as we continue to discuss the occult topics in the future is that occult really just means hidden, and there is so much depth in there that it can't really define one single thing. Since we're talking briefly about occult and what it actually means and the history of our mainstream religions and their background in the occult, I think it's also important to bring up the word paganism and its roots as well. While occult was used to reference anything practiced in secret, paganism was a word used by Christians to refer to any religion other than one of the main world religions. The term paganism can be traced back to the 4th century as a term used by early Christians. In that context, it was used to refer to people in the Roman Empire who practiced polytheism, and they lumped in many other religions that weren't related to Judaism at all. Since it was practiced by many in the more rural areas of a town and regularly consisted of animal sacrifices, it was referred to as the religion of the peasantry. What I think is so interesting is that when we refer to both occultism and paganism, we tend to believe that there must be a set belief or rule system that goes with each that people will follow, that'll kind of push it into some category, such as with Christianity, it's clear that you must believe that Jesus Christ was the Son of God. But strangely, these terms were given by the mainstream religions as just a pushover to basically encompass a broad area of religious topics that didn't fit into what they believed. So anything non-Christian was pagan. So both terms are really quite subjective and broad. And in the 20th century, people who practiced what we consider to be pagan beliefs did not refer to themselves as such. The term pagan comes from the Latin word paganus, meaning religion delimited by markers or relating to the countryside, as it was practiced more in the backwoods of a society. Frankly, to this day, there are so many sects of occult that have come and gone throughout history and many that still practice these obscure beliefs around us. So basically, what I want you to take away from that and to consider as we continue having these talks going forward is that occult means hidden, and occult topics are really just things that were practiced in secrecy to be hidden from mainstream religions while people were afraid of persecution. And anything considered pagan was basically any non-mainstream religion that was not verified as a real religion by the early Christian church. Before we move on to talk about Friday the 13th, I'd like to briefly talk about the idea of magic and how we view magic and how it actually relates to science and the idea of metaphysical topics. Throughout history, whenever we can't explain something by the natural laws we know and understand, we dismiss it as magic. Back in the day, many advanced forms of technology were, in fact, considered to be magic until people became used to them and were able to understand them. Think about the joke you see constantly on television. Someone gets brought from the past into our current timeline, and then they're aghast by our modern technology. They generally exclaim that it's witchcraft or magic. This makes sense to me. I mean, after all, as human beings, if we can't physically measure something in our hands, we have a hard time accepting it. It's our preconceived notions that keep us from growing in the end, and when something is considered science, we immediately validate the idea as we instantly believe that it has been researched enough and is measurable enough to be validated. When we think of the metaphysical world, our feelings and intuition, we immediately become hesitant, as it's a vague topic that is known to be mostly immeasurable by current scientific means. But frankly put, almost every form of technology that exists now was considered magic until we fully understood it. Science is generally always considered magic until we are able to understand it, and then it becomes science. I want you to think about that. There are many ideas still out there that we know to be science now that may have seemed like magic until just a few years ago. There are many ideas still out there now that will be science one day that may seem like magic as we don't understand it currently. And that's how I feel personally about the human consciousness and the metaphysical world out there. There are so many ideas out there related to human consciousness that we just don't understand. But perhaps if we stop to make a clear analogy, it could help. Think of the physical world versus the astral world, like the real world and the internet. The astral world, just like the internet, exists, though we can't clearly see and measure it. We still gather information through invisible means, but that doesn't mean that the information we're getting from this metaphysical internet isn't real. Many new theories in the world of physics are currently unmeasurable, and, well, they're theories, so they also look like magic to us. Time travel, string theory, and many other properties of quantum physics. But because the label of science is slapped on these concepts, they're instantly taken more seriously. Yet, what I find especially interesting as I delve into much higher levels of consciousness throughout my metaphysical adventures is how often physics comes into play. Meditation and physics are two sects that most people would not associate with each other. Yet, somehow, when I dive deeper into these studies, the concept between physics always seems to make an appearance. And I'll be discussing this in further detail as I go throughout my studies, but it's just something I would like to add an addendum to, as we'll definitely be diving more into this in the future of this show. For instance, kinetic energy is a huge element when we study manifestation and how our motivations and our personal energy can affect the physical objects around us. Another example is what I like to call the realm of possibilities. You may know this from the new physics studies as their increasingly popular theory called the many worlds interpretation. This is the idea that every choice you make creates a new split, a new world, a new universe, and a new you. In my mind, this many worlds interpretation matches the idea of manifestation pretty closely, though one is considered scientific while the other is considered a vague, fantastical concept by many. But think about it. We have kinetic energy inside ourselves that we are always directing into both the physical and the non-physical world. By directing our energy in certain possibilities, couldn't we make the outcome we desire more likely? Perhaps there are infinite possibilities around us, and the more we direct our energy at one, the more likely that outcome is to happen. In turn, we shape our outcomes and mold our futures. As I sit and think on this, I realize that sometimes by relating a topic as magical as manifestation to hard science, it can make people feel less silly about believing it. We are taught from an early age that seeing is believing in our society, so we only believe what is tangible to us. Presented as manifestation, the topic seems far-fetched and ridiculous. When presented as the physics theory of the many worlds interpretation, it just somehow seems more real. While I am in no way a physicist, and I'm still working on studying the physics behind the metaphysics, if you will, my journey through meditation and the human consciousness has opened up my mind to possibilities that I never thought existed. And I'm currently enjoying the journey it's taking me on. This will be a topic we will discuss in future episodes on and off as it appears relevant. But today, do you know what is most relevant? It is Friday the 13th. So let's talk about the history of Friday the 13th and the many theories as to why people believe it is an unlucky day. I think the funniest thing about Friday the 13th is that it's so ingrained in our culture and other cultures as well out there, but no one really knows why, for sure, Friday the 13th is considered unlucky. It's kind of become a tradition, and like most traditions, its origin story is a little bit blurry. I guess we can start by saying that there are many tales out there that discuss the unluckiness of the number 13. One story in particular, perhaps the oldest story, traces back the origin of the unlucky 13 to a Norse myth. 12 gods threw a dinner party in Valhalla, and Loki, the trickster god, was not invited. He crashed the party and arrived as the 13th guest when chaos ensued. He arranged for Hodor to shoot his brother Baldur with a mistletoe-tipped arrow. Baldur died and the earth got dark and mourned on this bad, unlucky day. Charles Bonatti claimed that after this Norse tale, the number 13 being unlucky spread from Scandinavia down throughout Europe around the start of the Christian era, which is why the number 13 appears to be unlucky in many Christian tales as well. In Christianity, Jesus' Last Supper had 13 individuals present in the upper room, and supposedly occurred on the 13th of Nisan Holy Thursday, the night before his death on Good Friday. Others speculate that it's possible that we just love the number 12 so much that unbalancing that nice, clean number by making it 13 just rubs us the wrong way. After all, we've always had 12 in our Western culture ingrained everywhere. 12 days of Christmas, 12 months, 12 zodiac signs, and we recognize the 12 labors of Hercules, the 12 gods of Olympus. We just freaking love the number 12. It's possible that we just don't like adding that extra number over onto 12. But what about Friday? The two aspects of this, Friday and the number 13, were not historically documented together as being bad prior to the 19th century, so it's a rather new idea. The first known recording was in a play in 1834 where a character suggests, "I was born on a Friday, December 13th, 1813, from which all my misfortunes come." It was also documented in H.S. Edwards' biography of Giochi Rossini, who died on February 13th as well, with the statement, "Rossini was surrounded to the last by admiring friends, and if it be true that, like so many Italians, he regarded Fridays as an unlucky day and 13 as an unlucky number, it is remarkable that on Friday, 13th of November, he passed away." Supposedly in the Bible, just as Jesus was crucified on Friday, Eve supposedly gave the apple to Adam on a fateful Friday as well, and it was also supposedly the day when Cain killed his brother Abel. Despite its unclear origins, it is believed that the unlucky aspect of that date spread wildly in 1907 with the publication of T.W. Lawson's popular novel, Friday the 13th, in which an unscrupulous broker takes advantage of people's belief that this is an unlucky day by creating panic on Wall Street. In the history of Friday the 13th, on Friday the 13th, 1307, the officers of King Philip the Ninth of France arrested hundreds of Templar knights, many of which were later executed. Many also believe that this incident caused the unlucky superstitions of Friday the 13th, but this cannot be verified. On Friday the 13th in 1940, the German bombing of Buckingham Palace occurred, and in 1970, a cyclone killed more than 300,000 people in Bangladesh, and in 2012, the crash of the Costa Cornucopia cruise ship occurred. In the late 19th century, Captain William Fowler created the 13 Club to remove this stigma around Friday the 13th. The 13 Club dined regularly on the 13th day of the month in room 13 of the Knickerbocker Cottage, where guests would sit down for a 13-course dinner and pass beneath a ladder to enter. It's also important to note that it's not a worldly phenomenon, as in Greece and Spanish-speaking countries, it's Tuesday the 13th that's considered unlucky. So while many, many cultures do consider it that, it's not everybody. However, prior to all the history of unluckiness, would you believe that Friday the 13th may have been considered good luck to the ancient pagans? For instance, Friday was believed to be associated with the divine feminine. Friday, meaning the day of Frigg in Old English, may imply that it was the day of Frigg or Frigga, who was associated with love, marriage, and motherhood. She was also said to help maintain social order and could weave fate. As such, Friday was said to be a lucky day for the Norse. And the number 13 in pagan pre-Christian times was supposedly linked to the number of lunar and menstrual cycles, and since fertility was prized in those times, 13 was supposedly a lucky number. So it's possible that, like with many other occult holidays and ideals and festivals, such as Samhain being Halloween and Saturnalia and Yule becoming Christmas, Christianity rewrote the once lucky idea of Friday the 13th and turned it into an unlucky time to keep people away from celebrating paganism. It's an interesting possibility, and honestly, I think there might be some credibility there, though I don't know for sure. What else is interesting is that in my adventures for my show Weird World Adventures, we actually visited the Winchester Mystery House, and Sarah Winchester herself, the woman who continually built on this mansion repeatedly for decades, had a lot of the number 13 sprinkled throughout her house, and the historian there actually told me that 13 used to be considered a lucky number, and Sarah might have been using it as a way to bring luck, though now many people see it as a curse or that she had spirits talking to her and kind of add more of the macabre to what was actually going on. Honestly, the more I dive into my occult studies, the more I find so many misconceptions and so many examples of the Christian church changing the meanings of things to cover up old pagan beliefs and to bring people to Christianity. It's pretty wild. So many of our current holidays came from the roots of the old pre-Christian world, but we'll discuss that in another time. And it's quite possible that Friday the 13th came from these same roots. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed this first episode of Mallory's Weird World Adventures. It was a little bit chaotic as I was talking about many different topics that we will cover in the future. I hope you got a little taste of everything and that you'll have a nice glimpse of what this show will be like. I'm so excited to conduct, hopefully, weekly discussions, interviews, and adventures all following the ideals of occultism, metaphysics, paranormal lore, ghosts, weird history, and of course, adventure. Hopefully, I will come with you guys every single week. It just depends on where I am around the world. Sometimes I will not have service if I'm in some remote place, but either way, I will create great episodes from there, and I am excited to share my weird world with you guys. So I'll see you guys next week, and until then, stay weird.